Good evening. This is Mae Bressel in Carmel, California. This is tape number 400, August the 3rd, 1979, and it's side one. There was an article in the paper this last week about New York coroner fired over Rocky gossip. That was Dr. Michael Bodden, chief medical examiner for New York City. Manhattan District Attorney Robert Morgenthau fired him for allegedly making remarks about Rockefeller and Meghan Marshak dying at the time they were having sexual intercourse. The interesting thing is that Dr. Michael Bodden was the main medical director for the House Select Committee on Assassinations that just finished their $6 million ripoff investigating the assassination of John Kennedy. And, of course, one of the most highly guarded secrets of the Central Intelligence Agency are those medical autopsy reports. And I'm wondering if the firing of Bodden had anything to do with what that CIA agent saw when he photographed and took some of the copies of the real autopsy pictures of John Kennedy. It's interesting that he's fired now. He also was accused of losing evidence in two murder cases. Now, that's a typical pattern of persons working for the intelligence community in the coroner's office or in the police department just at the time that Sirhan was arrested. The gun that he used, allegedly used to fire at Robert Kennedy, was disposed of. And Ted Chirac has been looking for that for many years, trying to locate that gun just as the sleeve was cut off the coat of Robert Kennedy and the panels in the ceiling at the Ambassador Hotel. So the ballistic evidence is off. Sometimes you can lock a person up in jail and blame them for a crime they didn't do and lose the evidence and go on the evidence that's already disposed of. Other times you can let a murderer off free for lack of evidence. It has been cited that he was responsible or part of losing evidence in two murder cases. I wonder how political they are and who they are and what was involved with Michael Bodden. It'd be interesting to follow his career. Because of his being used by the CIA with the House Select Committee and see where he goes from there. Of course, he never treated the Rockefeller murder as a murder. He telephonically from California gave approval to cremate the body. They not only cremated it, but they hurried and did it a day before the service on Sunday instead of Monday. And the real people to question in that murder were Andrew Hoffman, the aide with the walkie-talkie that was standing over him, Dr. Ernest Essakoff from Johannesburg, who sent Rockefeller 22 blocks farther away than he had to be at the time that he was already dead, and they sent him on to the farthest hospital instead of one few blocks away. And, of course, there's Poinchetta Pierce and Meghan Marshak and David Lustig. David Lustig is the photographer from California who was engaged to Meghan Marshak, the woman who was with Rockefeller. And he was a photographer both in Venezuela and at Rockefeller State in New York. These people have simply faded away like the Chappaquiddick girls. I called that affair a while back in earlier tapes Chappaquiddick Rocky. And if you want those tapes going back to February or March or don't have them, you can get those. But Dr. Michael Bodden was fired as the head coroner in New York just at the time that the House Select Committee on Assassinations was coming out with their report. I'm sure that everybody else associated with it could probably be investigated and find links to the intelligence community, because Robert Blakey only used people from the CIA and FBI that he could trust during his investigation. The gentleman died this week. This was not a murder. I'm sure this was just a death, but equally as interesting. His name is known to the older listeners. The young ones will have to look it up in history books. His name is Rexford G. Tugwell. And he was one of Franklin Roosevelt's brain trusts. He's described in the newspaper as one of the brain trusts. There's a large article about him in the Washington Post, July 25th, 1979. It describes his career and labels him liberal, which I doubt. And I look at his past career and doubt that he's anywhere near a liberal, whatever that means. I really don't know what that means. It describes his work in Washington, D.C. as the Assistant Secretary of Agriculture and at Columbia University, where he worked for Franklin Roosevelt on a three-member team. In the Department of Agriculture, he had supported programs to pay farmers and take the land out of production rather than to grow unneeded crops that would have, in quotes, been destroyed, but of course were needed for poor people during the Depression, that they all could have used the crops and maybe pitched in and paid the farmer back if they had been smart enough. Back to his Columbia University career, when he Cadwell worked with two other members of a three-member team that were called the Trust, and one of them was a man named Raymond Moley, M-O-L-E-Y, and the other was Adolph A. Burrell, a law professor at Columbia. Now, Adolph Burrell's name comes in very interestingly later because he is the man working with Whitaker Chambers and Richard Nixon to escalate the Red Scare against Alger Hiss and detract from the United Nations and Dumbarton Oaks and various organizations that Alger Hiss was working with, and primarily that pumpkin paper story of the microfilm in Whitaker Chambers' backyard and so forth was a great tool to get Richard Nixon, working from the House on up to the Senate later, and then vice presidency and then president, on this Red Scare tactic that his political backers supported all the way up his career. Well, later on in Richard Nixon's career, when he's now in the Senate, the same secretary, Undersecretary of State Adolph A. Burrell, is now testifying on behalf of a man, I've mentioned him before in other tapes, Nikolai Malaxov of the Iron Guard, and he is the Nazi that was working with Albert Goebbels, the brother of Goebbels, and Malaxov had several million dollars in Chase Manhattan Bank after the war, and then when he went before the Congress to get his citizenship, Undersecretary of State Burrell personally testified for Malaxa on behalf of the Congressional Subcommittee on Immigration. And then Richard Nixon, as a young senator, introduced a private bill in 1951 to allow Malaxa to come into the United States. That wasn't the end of the career for Nixon or the man that Burrell had signed over for, because then he goes out to California to Richard Nixon's law office and in Whittier with the man that put Nixon into office, Mr. Herman Perry of the Bank of America, that began Nixon's anti-Red campaign against Jerry Voorhees. Then Malaxa goes on to Ron Perón in Argentine, Buenos Aires, and meets with the CIA and Otto Skorzeny and top Nazis, and works with the Odessa and has a long link of working with the Nazi underground brought to this country by Burrell. I think that's interesting to look back, even if I've used it in other instances before, because Burrell and Nixon were to sign for this man and bring him to the United States and then join him down in South America with his other Gestapo buddies, now that he was a multimillionaire with a dummy front, running out of Richard Nixon's office in Whittier. But then their buddy, the buddy of Mr. Burrell, is to come out to California. At first he was at the University of Chicago, working. That university was set up by the Rockefeller family, and he was working there as a professor. Then he was sent to Santa Barbara in 1964, right after John Kennedy was killed, to the Center for the Study of Democratic Institutions to work with Robert Hutchins, the former chancellor of the University of Chicago. What they did from 1964 to 1970 was to rewrite the Constitution. And as Mr. Tugwell said in 1970, that we have to revise the United States Constitution because he believes that the existing charter has outgrown the needs of America in 1970. Now, you remember when Nixon was in the White House, 1968 to 1970, and John Mitchell was the Attorney General, and he said, this country's going to go so far right, you won't know it. And Nixon had Tom Charles Houston combining the Defense Intelligence Agency, Navy Intelligence, Army, and CIA, and National Security Agencies, and all of them were going to be able to open mail, wiretap, surveillance, dirty tricks, and that counterintelligence Houston plan was already getting very formulated at the time the new Constitution was being written. A member of this group that was putting the Constitution together was none other than Warren Burger, who was not yet appointed Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. But between 1964 and when he was appointed, he had flown out to California to work with 150 other experts and with Rexford Tugwell, whose name is on the Constitution, the new Constitution. And his job was to make sure, he flew out there to make sure, to persuade the drafters to omit the proposed constitutional guarantee of trial by jury. And he said that the adversary trial, the adversary system requiring a formal case of two opponents doesn't necessarily produce justice. And then after he worked on that, helping get rid of our old Constitution and doing away with trial by jury, he was appointed Chief Justice of the Supreme Court by Richard Nixon. I've given you on the printed sheet some of the proposals of the Constitution that was written in 1970, one being that the nation would be taken away. There would no longer be 50 states, but 20 republics, and that's similar to the Metro Plan that I have on another tape over a year ago. The President of the United States would be elected not for 2 4-year terms, but 1 9-year term. The two vice presidents would supervise general affairs and internal affairs, and the president would say his own choice which one of the two would succeed him. A 9-year president who's in for one term, who can do anything he wants and not account to the people, would select his vice president out of the two. The Senate would no longer be elected with two from every state, but would be composed of former presidents, vice presidents, high public officials, some members selected by the president or the judiciary in the House of Representatives, and no longer elected by the people. It'd be a hand-picked Senate with people like Henry Kissinger and Richard Nixon and I suppose Wayne Hayes and Carl Albert and all the Korea Gate and Reverend Moon and whoever they wanted would be in the Senate. That would be the Senate. And then the House of Representatives would be different than it is now, in that 100 of them would be elected at large. And then there'd be 400 other members of the House of Representatives, but only 100 would be elected. And the Supreme Court would be abolished and divide its powers between a High Court of the Constitution, a Court of Appeal, and a Claims Court. And then there would be no Bill of Rights, and they would guarantee you the same safeguards, but with no Bill of Rights, and no right to trial by jury, and no right to bear arms. Well, I'm not very sad that Mr. Tugwell left, and let's give him a good kick and farewell, and we have to live with his mischief, because that doesn't mean that his hard work Constitution can't be pulled out at any time of national chaos and so forth. In fact, John Conley was saying on the radio this week that he wanted a one-term president, 9 years, or 6 years, and not elected back again. And on KGO, an announcer was saying that Conley would be the strongest president because he wouldn't be afraid to go in the Middle East, make war, and kick up a storm, because he doesn't believe in re-election, a one-time chance at it. There was an editorial in the Los Angeles Times this week, The Poisoning of America. It said, the Americans are paying a price for using chemicals. They're preserving their food, their crops, new products. They camouflage their wrinkles. There are 1,000 new chemical compounds on the market every year. Some are causing cancer, birth defects, sterility, and other ailments. Probably 3 or 4 dozen ailments. They don't even list them. It goes on to say the Environmental Protection Agency has only a $103 million budget to regulate the chemical industry, and the Bureau of Food and Drug Administration has a $90 million to watch them. So that takes $190 million just to watch what the chemical industries are doing with the air we breathe and what we wear and what we eat. And also the fluorescent lighting, the environment around us, where we are, and the asbestos, how we blow our hair, and so forth. The chemicals are everywhere, and $193 million is spent just checking them up, and they can't even scratch the surface. They said that the failure to ban asbestos was considered, and a long time ago they knew, as long as 60 years ago, that asbestos was harmful. But even though it was a known health hazard, they consider it too useful to do it out. Now, instead of looking for a substitute, they went on and gave cancer to the employees, knowing that they would probably get cancer, which is no different than working in the Nazi concentration camps until you die, or working into the rocket factories until you're dead. The Nazis had the idea of using slave labor until they died. And in this country, we are using people in dangerous occupations, knowing the problem with the cancer, but using their labor anyway. And when they get sick, they can be replaced with new people. Last week, I talked about a drug, BZ, that chemical compound that the government has 50 million tons of, and it's enough to wipe out, at least psychologically for a while, the entire world 10 times over. But there was another article about it in the Washington Post of interest this week, and also I got access this week to the government study, some pages from the Technical Report 7710, dated August 1977, prepared for the Office of the Project Manager for Chemical Demilitarization and Installation Restoration by the U.S. Army Medical Bioengineering Research and Development Laboratory in Fort Derrick, Maryland, signed by David Rosenblatt, Jack Dacher, Ronald Shiotsuko, and Carl D. Rowlett. So I thought I would share with you what the Army was saying about their drug DZ based upon their own reports, because those are always the most interesting. They differ so sharply from what the newspaper prints. So I'll share with you the newspaper article and then their own report about this drug, because this is a pertinent drug and it's something we shouldn't lose sight of. The Washington Post, July 18, 1979, has an article, Army Slowly Dumping the Delirium Bombs. Now, there's a little deception there. Slowly dumping is the Department of Understatement, because the article says that they've now given a contract to a company, Battelle Research Organization, to come up with a disposal plan, but it won't be working for 8 to 10 years. I can't visualize how much 50 tons is, but it seems difficult to believe it would take 10 years to dispose of it. Furthermore, these aren't really bombs. They call them delirium bombs, but they are given orally, they are given in water, they are given in alcohol, and as a substance in food. They're not dropped from the air, or imagine it can be, but what they call the delirium bomb, they also write up, is taken orally. Now, the important thing is that the Army began to stockpile this and drew up their major supply. In 1960, they sat around with a strategist. In 61, the Army was gobbling up this huge supply, which they said causes people to hallucinate up to 80 hours, but then it blots out all recollection of the experience. And you think about how many crazy people are acting with unpredictable behavior or running out naked and climbing lampposts. One man in Los Angeles who was shot by the Los Angeles Police Department. A lot of people out there acting with their crazies and no past history or noticeable reason. And this says that if they take it, it does blot out all recollection of what happened. And it's in powdered form. Then the Washington Post article goes on and has something that's in the medical research paper. It says that in 1975, Gerald Ford signed an order banning most chemical and biological weapon developments, but he allowed the Army to keep BZ stockpiled for use in civilian disturbances. So you get people like Adolf Berle working with Richard Nixon through the Alger Hiss and through the importation of Nazis and the network of persons from Nixon's office down to Argentine, and you have an assembly of people with the mentality of drawing up a constitution that would create riots when a lot of this is going on, and then people like Gerald Ford, who was appointed on the Warren Commission by Richard Nixon, who then was appointed vice president by Richard Nixon. Instead of protecting us, the people, they create the situations for the anger and the riots, and then they create the medicine for the riots. So that this drug, which the Army admitted testing on over 2,000 people, is still kept, thanks to Gerald Ford, in case we need it for street rioting in the United States. Now, what does the report say? In essence, the report right from the Army from Fort Derrick, Maryland. I'll read you a few high points of it because there are a lot of details, but there's some points you should know. In the first place, they said there's over 100,000 pounds. I guess that's the 50 tons. They were manufactured in 1 year, allegedly, for military use. in the 60s, and the Army bought it all up. Millions of dollars were spent in creating the drug, and they have given the drug to our own soldiers. They said they've done that. They have not developed any technology yet for destroying the drug. They admitted that it's extremely stable, and then they went on to define stable is that it continues to exist for as long as 135 years. Now, the proclamation of BZ was it lasts at least 2 weeks, but in their own papers, the documents from Fort Derrick, Maryland, it exists for 135 years. Now, the difference between at least 2 weeks and its long expectancy, which they use the term extremely stable, there's quite a gap there in what they want the media to tell, and you don't see any headlines that BZ lasts. If you're sprayed with BZ in a riot, it can last 135 years. The Army report says that when it breaks down, it can break into other poisons, which may also present a hazard to the health of the Americans. The report says the Army did no study regarding the effects of BZ as a cancer-causing agent. They did no study to determine if there's mutation damage from people exposed to BZ. And they did write in the report that they did no follow-up of the people that they gave it to. The experts indicated in their report that BZ would cause definite long-term mental problems. There intended to be no prosecution for administering it to the people they were, quotes, testing. And as I say, Gerald Ford separated it from chemical and biological warfare. And when they were asked the question in June 1979, why did you not list that in chemical and biological warfare, the answer was, because it's needed for American citizens in riot situations. Its usage on American citizens in possible riot situations. If you watch the news this week, the unemployment rate is soaring, the inflation is out of hand, with no jobs and no money and no security, we're getting closer to that riot situation, and then they can use this drug, which they said is lethal, it can kill, or it can incapacitate for life. Both animals and humans, according to the Army Medical Research Project, were administered and allowed to inhale this incapacitating dosage. And the range for a human being went on a scale. They have a scale for a minimal effect for human beings that could go from 32 to 384. That's the lethal dose. They said the estimates of the safety margin of BZ are inconclusive, but based on a comparison of the incapacitating dose for man with animal lethal dose, they estimate the human lethal dose ranges from 32 to 384. They figured out the minimal effective dose for 50% of the population to produce a change in their mental performance. Now, there was a story out that Alan Dulles had bought enough LSD for 100 million people, or half the American population, when he was director of the CIA. Then Operation Mind Control came out, and there were other persons writing books on mind control that said, no, this wasn't true, that Alan Dulles had 10,000 LSD. Well, that's not true, because this report talks about BZ for 50% of the population in the United States would be the 100,000 at the time that Alan Dulles had his medicine or his doses ready for us. And again, they write the physiological effects persist to at least 2 weeks, and on the other report, they say it's long range, up to 135 years and persistent. The report said that the survey of their literature didn't produce any information on the environment fate. They haven't studied the toxicity to crops, to aquatic vertebrae, invertebrae, and no information on animals or plants has been reported. They also decided, in quotes, the need for ecological impact studies is a relatively low priority. They have all of this drug, and it's very unimportant to do a study on the impact. Then there's a list of the symptoms that you get if you get this drug. Now, I'm particularly interested in it because, as I said, I believe that a member of my family, my son got it in 1967 based upon the symptoms. And every symptom that he had when he suddenly got sick overnight was this loss of muscle, this tachycardia, which is similar to a heart attack. He couldn't walk, he couldn't stand up, his pupils were dilated. There was a total loss of memory and confusion and inability to move and what they call unpredictable behavior. And these are the symptoms that the Army has listed for people who get VZ, and they also mention here that it can be given orally. It can be given in alcohol or water and or in LSD. A small dose would cause sleepiness and decreased alertness, and then there'd be an elevated heart rate and dry skin and lips, and you get drowsy and temperature. A large dose goes as follows, and they have a list of the symptoms that accompany the dose. A large dose from 1 to 4 hours, within 4 hours you get tachycardia, which they define as speeding up the heartbeat. It's similar to a heart attack. Dizziness, ataxia, which is loss of your muscle coordination. They don't work. Vomiting, dry mouth, blurred vision, confusion, sedation, and progressing to a stupor. In 4 to 12 hours, you're unable to respond effectively to the environment or to move about. And in 12 to 96 hours, you get unpredictable behavior and increased activity, and that's the way the BZ drug goes. They described it as a very potent that could be given to the central nervous system, and it is affected by BZ with oral doses to get that heart rate and skin temperature and so forth. The effects on the mental performance persist. Again, repeated for the third time, in this thing for at least 2 to 3 weeks in humans, but then on other pages it says it persists forever because it has a life of 135 years. They also describe in their report that they do not do follow-ups, and they haven't except for 2 people. That report was written in 1977 and was just released, and in 1979, June of 79, 2 months ago, questions were asked at Fort Detrick, Maryland, certain questions on this drug. One was, where is it stored? And they answered in Arkansas, Utah, and Maryland. Have there been any leaks? Yes, there have been leaks. What are the storage safety requirements? There are no special requirements for storage. What is the current policy? The current policy under the general U.S. policy is the maintenance of a deterrent and a retaliatory capability. Are there any treaty agreements? There are no specific treaty agreements to the use of BZ. See, I believe that that $2 to $3 million that was just allocated to that company, that they said would take 8 to 10 years to get rid of, I'll bet you they will be using some of that on the people before the 10 years are up. Otherwise, they would bury it very quickly and look for solutions to employment. But the solutions are not going to come about, and the chemicals are ready. And I don't believe they would hesitate to use those chemicals on the people. A subscriber to the tapes sent me an article from Toledo, Ohio, an interesting article on the moon rock, and I thought I'd share it with you real quickly before we get to the other side of this tape. There was an exhibition of the Gem and Rockhound Club that's going to take place, and NASA has loaned them a display of a moon rock that weighs 4.5 ounces, but there's certain conditions under which they can have the rock. The rock has to be in the personal possession of a courier at all times. It can't be checked or stored or transported in the truck of any automobile. In no case may a courier keep the sample in a motel or hotel room overnight, nor may you keep it in your home overnight. Each transfer of the rock is signed by a document indicating the transfer of responsibility. The rock is encased in lucite, so you can't touch it or examine it anyway. But only a cloth provided by NASA may be used to dust the lucite, and only special gloves which are provided may be used in handling it. The rock must be under constant surveillance of a responsible guard. Every minute it's on display, and each night the rock will be removed under guard to the Toledo Police Department for safekeeping and returned under armed guard to the display site every morning. The rock, as I say, weighs 4.5 ounces. I spent the day this last week with Bill Kasing, who wrote the book We Never Went to the Moon, America's $30 billion swindle. So evidently it's still costing millions of dollars to protect the rocks when they're moved around for whatever reason. I can't imagine, but they're in Lucite with special gloves and guards and treated in this manner. We'll turn over now on the other side of this tape.